This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. The Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act was first passed in 1974, most recently reauthorized in 2002. It's a law that enjoys strong bipartisan support. It's based on a broad consensus that children, youth, and families involved with the juvenile and criminal courts should be protected with federal standards and also gather good data that can be compiled and determine best practices, which can be shared and put into places all over the country. But for the last 8 years, the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act has been in need of another reauthorization, and that's not been able to happen in Washington, D.C. for one gridlock reason or another. So what's holding all this up, and what does it mean for Bexar County's juvenile justice program? We're joined by Judge Laura Parker. She's the state district judge for the 386th District Court, that's a juvenile court. Welcome, Judge.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Also, we have on the line David Riley. He's the executive director of the Texas Juvenile Justice Department. David Riley, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And also joining us, we have Bexar County Sheriff Susan Pamela. Sheriff, welcome back to The Source.
Hey, thanks.
All right. So let me ask you off the bat, Judge Parker, what are your concerns? Why should we be looking towards Washington, D.C. and saying enough already? Pass a reauthorization of the Juvenile Justice Delinquency Prevention Act?
Well, as you mentioned, the act enjoys bipartisan support. And for us here in Texas, it really provided a blueprint of the way we wanted to move things in the juvenile justice system until it kind of met its demise just through inaction in Congress. I think, you know, we'd receive more money from the federal government to implement the programs that we know work, the successful programs of keeping kids closer to home, reserving incarceration and detention for the serious offenders, and providing more services that will benefit families and be able to keep kids close to home.
And Sheriff Pamela, I know that recently you were up in Washington, D.C., and you were testifying, talking about Bexar County's programs to deal with mental health and other issues, and did this come up at all? You know, talking about trying to get this thing passed.
Well, in fact, Senator Cornyn, who was leading
our own senator, yes, Texas,
he was part of helping move forward the Juvenile Justice Delinquency Prevention Act as well. And when we talk about mental illness, you know, so often that shows up when. Before individuals are, you know, in their 20s. And so being able to address delinquency, mental illness, behavior issues, if those are addressed before they come of age, the age of criminality, which is 17 now in Texas, then there's less likelihood that they will end up in the adult system. And so anything that helps break that cycle or, you know, prevents a young person from getting into further trouble when they reach adulthood is better for all of us, because dealing with it up front is much more effective than waiting until they're in the criminal justice system, and then it's criminal, not civil.
Dave Riley, executive director of the Texas Juvenile Justice Department. So $800 million is on the table if they can get this thing passed. How much of that would be coming to Texas? How would y'all be making use of that?
Oh, you know, I couldn't tell you the exact dollar amount that would be coming to Texas, but the federal government has over the last several years made an effort to address mental health much more so than they had prior to 12, 15 years ago. And the state is also focused on providing additional resources to mental health. And it's made a big difference. But as the sheriff said, early intervention and prevention and diverting kids from our system and from the criminal system ought to be the ultimate mission. And to do that, you've got to address the issues these kids present with when they're very young in school. The schools typically know who they are when they're in the third and fourth grade, who the kids who are at risk possibly heading our way. So having the ability to work with those families of those kids early on in a meaningful way is something we all ought to be concerned about.
Our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980 as we talk about the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act and what's happening here in Bexar County to do early intervention with kids who may act out and may end up in the court of Judge Parker here. What happens when they end up in your courtroom? Is that too late to help these kids?
No, of course it's not. I think sometimes there might have been some earlier potential intersection points.
Like, why are they there?
The number one offense here in Bexar County is possession of marijuana, followed by assaults. And most of the crimes happen at school. So there's a lot of school-based offenses, and police officers in schools are the ones that bring the charges. And we do have our share of serious violent offenders that we have to work with, capital murders, sex offenders, and that kind of thing. But the great majority have committed misdemeanor offenses. And it's those type of offenses that we think we can work with those kids in the community. And it's only, after efforts here aren't working that we would really consider putting them in a placement facility, or if they commit a felony, committing them to state custody.
So some 16-year-old kid gets busted at school with pot. He automatically goes to a courtroom like yours?
He doesn't automatically. We have some diversion programs through the Juvenile Probation Department where they're able to divert certain offenses for certain low-level offenders. Risk assessment is conducted in every single case. And if the person is found to be low risk to reoffend, they would be handled through community resources or with a diversionary contract with probation, and only wind up in court if they were unable to fulfill those requirements of the contract. And it's simple things like attending school, maintaining a curfew, not testing dirty on drug tests, simple things.
So the idea is to prevent this from being a life-destroying mistake that some young teen has made, Sheriff?
Yes, and there's an interesting statistic. The state of Texas, and probably close to half of all the states in the United States, use a factor of the third or fourth grade reading level as the determinant of how many prison cells they're going to plan for 20 years later. And so when you deal with young people and make sure they stay in school, that they have the kind of behavioral help and counseling to keep them in school and help them be successful, then we're going to cut the number of prison cells and jail cells that we need in the future. And I think that's a great investment for our community.
Right. And we're already seeing changes happening in Bexar County with the numbers dropping at the Bexar County Jail. Diversion projects seem to be paying off in certain ways. We'll be talking about that a little bit more when we come back from this break. Our phone lines are open if you want to join the conversation. What do you want to see happening with juvenile justice in Bexar County and across Texas? The number to call is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. It's been 8 years that the Juvenile Justice Delinquency Prevention Act has been lapsed, and it needs reauthorization. Almost happened last week. One lone senator, Tom Cotton, Republican from Arkansas, stood up and wouldn't give in to a unanimous consent. It's been going on for years. You really can't blame one party or the other for why this has not gone through. This is the way things are these days in Washington, D.C. So we got to figure out, let's get everybody up to speed on what the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act is, why for so many years people have said this has been a common sense approach that sets standards and protections for state juvenile justice programs. And maybe we can put some pressure on Washington, D.C. to figure out what we're going to do here. The phone number is 210-614-8980 if you want to call in. We do know that here in Bexar County that we have a track record of success with early intervention and specialty courts in dealing with juveniles in San Antonio and trying to save them from one bad day, one bad mistake, and trying to get them back onto the right path to being a productive citizen. And part of that plan has been Judge Laura Parker, and she's a state judge for the 386th District Court, the juvenile court. And tell me about when this comes to like sex trafficking with kids that come in, and this is happening and it's not going away. How do you deal with kids? I mean, they say that there's no such thing as child prostitution. It is just prostitution, or these kids are just innocent victims?
Well, these kids that are identified as victims of human sex trafficking have been exploited by adults that we have living here right in our community. And these are not kids that are brought in from out of state or out of town. These are our own very own teenagers and adolescents, some of them as young as 12 years old, that have run away from home, found themselves in the company of people who want to exploit them, and they start working. In the juvenile probation department and the juvenile courts, we've really tried to take an approach where we're going to address the specific needs of the kids that we get on our caseload. And so when we have girls, and I have had one boy in a special program I have, that are identified as victims of human sex trafficking, we get them in special type of counseling with ChildSafe and the Rape Crisis Center, and we really try to address their specific need. The days of a one-size-fits-all type of probation supervision are over here in Bexar County, and we are really trying to address specific needs, whether it's substance abuse, mental health problems, or kids who are victims of human sex trafficking.
Sheriff Pamerlo, you're at the tip of the spear, the law enforcement part of this. How is that changing?
Well, so often we are the first contact that an individual has with law enforcement, and sometimes that's the first indication that, one, there could be a mental health issue involved. And so if an early identification of individuals with mental health issues is really what's the key. When you take the adult population in our jail, over 20% of everyone in our jail has some level of diagnosed mental illness. And 60% of those, and when you talk about real numbers, that means over 400 people in our jail today who have mental illness have been in and out of our jail six or more times. So whether or not it's juveniles, it's children that interact with law enforcement, where they intersect, and we determine that there's a mental illness issue there. If we can address that first, before they go to jail, before they're entered in the criminal justice system, then we're going to save a lot of human capital for our community. It's not just about the dollars and cents, but it's a whole lot easier and financially appropriate to deal with mental illness, with the drug rehabilitation as early as possible, than it is for multiple times in and out of our criminal justice system. And I think a lot of the specialty courts that Judge Parker has helped to develop for juveniles, what has gone before is really the success of the specialty courts for adults, whether it's drug courts, DWI courts, our veterans treatment courts, misdemeanor mental health court, all of them have had success over the last 10 years of having recidivism rates that are anywhere from 9 to 32 points better than those who aren't involved in them. And that's the real success story. And that same kind of approach is the way that the Juvenile Justice Delinquency Prevention Act has helped in the past and will continue to help.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. The number is 210-614-8980 if you want to join the conversation as we talk about juvenile justice here in Bexar County and across the nation. Ray has called in. Hi, Ray. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Well, I wanted just to comment on what the sheriff said and about having, the third and fourth grade reading levels not on level by the time they're in third or fourth grade and of course, sixth grade, that they can be part of the, juvenile justice system. But we've got to keep those programs alive that the county and the city have for summer reading. We have a great summer reading program here in the city. But we need to definitely have the funding for teenage summer reading programs. We have children's librarians in all the branches, but teen librarians are not in all the branches. And we need to have programs for teens that are not just, to keep them out of trouble, but to keep them interested in reading. And I just think that's a very important thing that we need to keep on our focus and on the radar.
All right, Ray, thank you very much. You bring up an excellent point. I appreciate that. Let me shift that over to Dave Riley, the director of the Texas Juvenile Justice Program Department. What about academics for the kids who are in the Texas juvenile justice system?
We have the state system operates its own school district, and so subject to the same basic regulations that the state has, the TEA has, for all other independent school districts. So our kids are offered a full curriculum of academic instruction. We are making efforts to broaden those activities out, to try and add more extracurricular activities in. I think in terms of what your caller just mentioned, having proactive activities, things that normalize life for kids, things that we'd want our own kids to have exposure to if they had to be at a place like we operate, like enrichment programs, theater, arts, you know, drama, all those kinds of things that you'd expect to see in a typical public school ought to be a part of our system, too. And while we do have great programs, we have wonderful vocational programs, we just need to have more of them. So the ability to access federal dollars for those sorts of things is important to every state so that they can do that and build those kinds of programs.
And what about the transfer of credits? Or is that something that happens?
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you asked that, because that's been, I think, an issue for especially for local facilities and local operations for many years. And it seems like it depends on where it is, and it shouldn't be based on that. There ought to be some pretty fundamental, basic requirements, expectations, that student records are going to get transferred in a timely way, that kids are going to get the credits that they deserve for academic instructional time, and that should not be a problem. And many times when you see breakdowns like that, it presents such a hindrance for a kid's successful reentry back into their home community. So that's an issue, I think, for OJJDP, but also for the education side of the house, that they have to be tasked with those same requirements.
Okay. Let me get Joseph on the line. He's called in. And Joseph, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. How y'all doing today?
Doing good.
Well, I just wanted to say, first off, it's a great show. I listen every day. And from what I'm hearing, this sounds like a great program. As for someone, you know, when I was younger, I made my share of mistakes. I was actually in the juvenile system. As I was in the system, I was actually diagnosed as being bipolar. And, you know, it started to head towards, you know, getting some help for it and everything else. And then about midway through, suddenly I was all better because my mother's insurance ran out. My point is how far is the state going to go to see that the kids get the help that they need?
All right, Joseph, thank you for that call. I appreciate it. Let me ask you, Judge Parker, if you can respond to that.
Well, one of our challenges is always kind of the coordination of medical services, whether they're physical problems or mental health problems. You know, a lot of times having insurance, while it's great, sometimes it only pays for a certain number of days in a facility or a certain number of sessions. Sometimes kids that are on Medicaid or CHIP, they don't have those same challenges. So the two systems are not working perfectly together. It's been one of my biggest complaints since I've been a judge, is that, you know, we get someone into the detention center, we get them medication they need, a diagnosis, a couple weeks worth of meds, and then they cannot get an appointment with a psychiatrist on the outside for 3 or 4 months. And so the cycle starts all over again. Kids are unmedicated, they get into more trouble, they're back in the detention center, then they get back on their meds, and we kind of start all over. And so there's a lack of capacity, and the Center for Healthcare Services is the main place where kids who don't have traditional insurance wind up, but the wait time to get an appointment can be very, very long. And Joseph, I hope you got your record sealed.
Okay. So Sheriff Pamela, you wanted to join on, add something to that?
You know, I think there again, the issue is capacity for community resources. And, you know, when we look at, you know, there's a book that is really a great description of mental health in the United States and especially in the criminal justice system. It's a book written by Pete Early, and the title of it is Crazy, A Father's Journey Through the Madness of the Mental Health System. And there are three themes. One theme talks about mental illness in the United States, a history of that, because we've really gone from warehousing the mentally ill in mental institutions in the 60s and 70s to now warehousing the mentally ill in jails and prisons. It also talks, it was an investigative report of...
Or leaving them on the streets.
Yes. And mental illness in the criminal justice system, where Pete Early spent 10 months in the Miami-Dade jail and really dug into the issues that are dealt with there. And then it was a story about his own son, who was diagnosed as bipolar and was in the criminal justice system. And but a wonderful success story today, because his son, Kevin, is now a peer-to-peer counselor for others who have mental illness. But it's even having enough practitioners, professionals that are in the that are, you know, provide the services, because there are many counties here in Texas that don't even have any kind of a mental health provider within 50 miles of where they need it. And so we've got to build capacity in terms of the professionals and the community services, so that we can provide those services in the community, not just in jails or prisons.
And a part of that would be something that could come from the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act reauthorization. It failed to be reauthorized just days ago. This is something that's not going to go away. We will come back to the Senate and to the Congress, and we'll hopefully they can work out the differences and we can move forward with it. I want to thank our guest, Judge Parker, State District Judge for the 386th District Court with a Juvenile Court, Sheriff Pomelo, and David Riley, Executive Director of the Texas Juvenile Justice Department. The source continues after this NPR news break. Stick with us.